Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio. Hello, thank you for tuning in. Today's question, did you ever want to be a doctor when you grew up? Are you a doctor listening now? If so, what kind? I'd especially love to hear from some surgeons. Hi, I'm Ben.
Hi, I'm Noel. And when I get blood drawn, I have to look away and close my eyes and breathe slowly or else I'll pass out because blood and the whole idea of the human body weirds me out.
So the human body overall?
Well, no, just the stuff inside
okay.
that should stay inside, remaining inside. I would prefer that to be the case. I don't like cutting in movies. Never liked it when people get cut.
Yeah.
So this story today was a bit of a stretch for me in terms of my own personal constitution.
I see. That's why you're talking about this. Yeah. We've also got our super producer, Casey Pegram, in the house. Casey, did you ever want... think of being a doctor when you were a wee tyke?
No, that was never one of my kind of growing up wannabe things.
How do you feel about the sight of blood?
I'm okay with the sight of blood in general. I don't like the sight of my own blood. So I don't like getting blood taken, you know, all that kind of stuff. I'm not a fan of.
Oh, you didn't ask me, Noel.
I think I have a feeling. You seem like a bit of a fearless, iron-gutted figure to me. You always have, but no. Well, do tell.
That's very kind of you. I have a life fraught with strange phobias that terrify me, like touching metal or having to touch cardboard.
Ooh, blood is kind of metallic. Does that fall into that category for you?
Only if I drink it. So usually having to do survival training kind of stuff gets you over that initial squig or squick. Pretty quickly, but I don't go out of my way to get in situations where I'm looking inside people or something. Because if I were to do that, then I would probably be better suited to be a surgeon rather than a podcaster. And today's episode is about surgery. There is some graphic stuff. Noel, I'm going to check in with you to make sure that we don't go too far out of a comfort zone.
I will be the bellwether of wussery in this one.
No, you're the canary in the cave mine of carnage.
Yes, the coal mine cave. But yeah, no, slight trigger warning. If you didn't already catch the drift, this story's kind of gross. There's some gore, and we're not going to be super descriptive about it because God knows I'll pass out on the floor right here in the shipping container. But just a heads up, if this isn't the kind of thing that you want to listen to, then don't.
That's fairly blunt, yes. This is also darkly comic. And to begin the story, we're going to need to introduce you to a fellow named Robert Liston, born on the 28th of October, 1794. He is a Scottish surgeon, and he was known for being a bit of a showman. He's a bit cocky.
Kind of a showboat.
Mm-hmm, kind of a David Blaine stage magician vibe. I don't know if that's something you want in a surgeon.
If a surgeon was a peacock, it would be this guy.
Yes, he was bantam indeed.
And as you know, I'm scared of birds too.
Yes, so this is a bird surgeon.
A peacock surgeon is like my worst nightmare.
You're welcome for the nightmare that you're going to have this weekend.
Thank you, Ben.
So Robert Liston, though, was one of the best, most widely known surgeons of his time. He got his education at the University of Edinburgh and became the first great northern anatomist of Blackwell's magazine. And by 1818, he was a surgeon at the Royal Infirmary of Edinburgh. And his legacy contains stuff that is primarily found in the medical community, you know, like inside trade info, and then stuff that made it into popular culture. Liston was very, very well known for the speed at which he conducted surgery.
He earned a fantastic nickname, which was the fastest knife in the West End, which is clever on a couple of levels.
It is, isn't it?
In fact, there's a little story that's in a Mental Floss article called On the Table with One of History's Most Infamous Surgeons by a guy named Matt Soniak that describes a particular surgery where Liston actually asked one of his assistants to set a timer so that he could show off how quickly he could amputate a gentleman's leg. And I'm just going to read you a quote because it's very visual and I love it. He goes, "The man grabs your leg and begins to cut just below the knee. He continues to hold onto your leg as one of his lackeys gets a tourniquet around it to free his cutting hand. He clasps the knife covered in your blood in his teeth and picks up a saw.
He cuts back and forth through the bone, drops the severed part of the leg into a bucket filled with sawdust and sews you up to the applause of the men sitting in the wings. They've timed the whole bloody procedure, get it? From first incision to clipping the loose threads on the sutures at just 2.5 minutes. And that quote comes from the journalist Matt Soniak, who has this fantastic article about Liston. So in 2.5 minutes... he has performed an amputation. His style may have seemed really cavalier, but we have to remember this is before so many of the medical discoveries and technical improvements that we have today.
Yeah, I'm guessing they may have given – did they have ether back then? That would have been something they at least had at their disposal, right?
I would imagine, but this is the age before widespread anesthesia.
That's true. So maybe – I don't know. I don't want to sound like an ignorant person here when it comes to surgery. Like I said, it kind of freaks me out. So I don't really look into it too heavily. But one thing I know from this research is quite often no one was given anything, and there was a whole lot of just absolute screaming and horror and terror.
Bite down on this
while assistants literally had to hold the person down – while the surgeon. So speed was kind of the name of the game.
Yes.
And no one was faster than Liston. There was even a story I read in the in a Gizmodo article or on an IO9 article that talked about how sometimes people would flee the operating table, like just like lunging away with a snail trail of blood left behind them.
Yeah, because the other people lost their grip, the assistants. So yes, speed is key here. It not only minimizes the patient's pain, but it also improves their odds of surviving the surgery. Liston is not only very, very fast, he's also very, very good for the time. If you went into Liston's operating theater, you only had a 1 in 10 chance of dying. Which right now sounds terrible.
It does sound pretty terrible, but let's compare it to the competition. Their rate of death was hovering around 1 in 4.
Yeah, so you can see why you would want to go to Liston, right? Sometimes patients would camp out, would literally sleep inside his waiting room for days waiting to see him.
A, can you imagine the scene?
Mm-hmm.
B, can you imagine the smell?
Right. He tried to see every single one of his patients. Although he was a little bit cocky, you know, he had a good heart when it came to helping people.
Which is another reason that speed factored into it so importantly, because you can't see people if you're, you know, taking your time with that old saw.
Yeah, we have to remember in this era, hospitals were very scary, intimidating places. People walked in having made peace with their creator, thinking, well, this might be it for me. I think it's just a cough, but we'll see. And Liston understood that. He thought he had a responsibility for his patient's feelings. So he wanted to have a thorough knowledge of anatomy, pathology, all that slow jazz, all the good stuff, and also be a good diagnoser of symptoms. But he also wanted to be compassionate. So it's very easy for us looking back to forget that softer aspect of his persona. He did care about people. He was crazy good, but he did care about people. And it's kind of like Tony Stark in the Marvel comics or the MCU because, you know, he's kind of arrogant. He's a bit of a show-off, but he's got a heart of gold underneath that. Here's one example that's very Tony Stark of him. Liston loved treating cases that his fellow surgeons had dismissed. Like the surgeons say, well, there's no way I'm going to do that because you'll die. It's an incurable condition. Good day, sir. I said to you, good day. They would go to Liston and you would say, oh, they say they can't.
They say it can't be done.
They say it can't be done.
I will prove them wrong.
Start the timer.
Exactly. Yeah, so, I mean, it's an interesting combination of compassion and cocksure bravado, for sure. And what ends up happening that enters into the big part, the quite disturbing part of our story, is that very thing. It's a combination of all those factors kind of playing into a perfect storm of horrible outcome.
That's right. Though he was good, he was not perfect. And sometimes, like Icarus, his hubris was his downfall. Once, for example, Liston was in such a hurry to amputate a leg that he accidentally cut a patient's testicles off along with the leg.
Yeah, like Icarus, he sawed too close to the taint.
Yes. His most famous story along these lines happens this way. There's an operation. It's the middle of this operation, right? And he's moving so, so very fast that he takes off the fingers of his surgical assistant. He's cutting through a leg, and he cuts through his assistant's hand while they're holding the patient down.
That's right. And again, we have to remember, this patient would have been struggling. It was no small feat to, you know, restrain these folks. And I'm sure there were some restraints involved, too, like having them strapped down. But you can't have somebody flopping around like a fish when you're trying to saw through their leg. So not only did he miscue and slice the fingers, I think part of this had to do with he would had aimed too high. And he sawed through up the upper hip or near the hip area, which is probably where the assistant was gripping him to get, you know, purchase to keep him held down.
Exactly. And this, he already knows this stuff is happening quickly. This is not ideal. So he's not going to stop the surgery, though. The show must go on. So he switches instruments, you know, throws one thing into that, to the floor, to a bucket of sawdust or what have you. And then while he's switching the instruments, you can't see it here, folks, but I am doing a pretty fantastic arms flailing impression here. He's switching instruments. I'm still trying to figure out how this happens, Noel, because he must have been just throwing his arms wide. There's a spectator standing nearby just watching the surgery, because that's what people used to do, and he slashes the spectator's coat with this bloody instrument, and this guy, the guy who's just the onlooker, freaks out.
Yeah, first of all, I'm not trying to, you know, throw anybody under the bus here, but that spectator was probably a little too much of a hovery looky-loo. He probably should have been keeping his distance a little bit in the situation. So I'm going to argue that he sort of had that coming a little bit. But yeah, he also like clearly was squeamish about the blood because by this point, fingers are off on assistant, squirting blood out of like bloody nub stumps. The leg is off, blood squirting out of there, absolute pandemonium in the operating theater. Mm-hmm. And the spectator, you know, almost gets, you know, when I first read this, I saw sliced and coat, and I misread as sliced throat. Yeah, but no, this is like the stuff of legend almost. Hard to confirm what exactly happened to this guy, but we've seen it written in several places that he had an immediate massive heart attack and died.
Right, yeah, he died later that night of fright. And the patient died because they got gangrene in the hospital. The assistant died because they got gangrene in the hospital.
I think that it all kind of spread from that original saw, too, that may have been tainted and it wasn't properly sterilized, which, gosh, like you said, they're throwing stuff into buckets. They're covered in blood. It seems like more like a butcher shop than a proper, you know, operating room. And, yeah, that infection got into the assistant's blood as well, and he also died from the effects.
And this is what led the distinguished surgeon and anesthesiologist Richard Gordon to call this the only operation in history with a 300% mortality rate.
He is also the guy who coined the nickname the fastest knife in the West End for Liston. So let's not forget, legacy-wise, Liston was remembered, you know, in his community, in the medical community, which is a very niche kind of close-knit community with a lot of esoteric knowledge that wouldn't mean much to anybody else. They remembered him for a lot of important, you know, deeds and works to further the medical profession. But of course, you know, most regular old folks are going to remember much more the story where he accidentally killed three people. you know, by slicing through them with a, you know, infected blade.
Well, he created the Liston splint, bulldog locking forceps. Those are still around today. And he also did play a role in the administration of ether. So he made proper contributions, but, you know, if it bleeds, it leads. And so now Liston is known outside of the medical community as the surgeon with a 300% mortality rate. Again, that story is somewhat anecdotal, but it is illustrative, I would argue, of the problems with medical care and surgery at the time. I mean, this is still before people washed their hands when conducting surgery.
It's true. He also published a couple of important medical texts, The Elements of Surgery and Practical Surgery. And this is pretty interesting. Near the end of his career, he made history when he performed a surgery in Britain on a man named Frederick Churchill in 1846, who had a right knee that had been giving him a lot of pain. So nothing had worked for him, and the only option was going to be amputation. But instead, Liston didn't use a knife. He actually pulled out a jar of ether, as you said, and then that became something that dentists and surgeons used as a surgical anesthetic from that point on.
Right, and these are the days when people were still saying, maybe we should hypnotize patients, but he found that ether worked as well. I don't want to let this go. The importance of people washing their hands, just in general. There was a guy, a Hungarian doctor named Ignaz Semmelweis, and he was the person who could have saved so many lives, especially during childbirth and so on, by the simple technique of washing one's hands.
Yeah, I believe he introduced that in 1847 at the Allgemeines Krankenhaus in Fair Deutschland.
But doctors were upset, and they didn't listen to him. They said, this Semmelweis guy is making us look bad because he's implying that we're giving these women and children fevers. He also wasn't very tactful. He was kind of a Larry David or Bernie Sanders figure. You know what I mean? A bit of a curmudgeon. Anyway, Semmelweis eventually ends up in a mental health facility in an asylum. So wash your hands is the conclusion of this. And hey, sometimes speed isn't everything.
Yeah. Come on, guys. Slow down. Smell the roses.
Thinking of the most vague summations I could make. I'm going real fortune cookie caption here. Something interesting will happen this weekend. Oh, wow. Okay, that one was
my
bad.
May you live in interesting times.
That one was my bad.
Great. It's time, gentlemen.
Jonathan Strickland, aka the Quister. This may come as a surprise to some people, but you're back again. You're back at your old shenanigans and tricks, huh?
They just can't keep me out. You keep changing the locks. I keep breaking in.
Well, as we know,
I missed you guys.
Oh, hey.
How was vacation, buddy?
Yeah. It was really good. Thank you for asking. Oh, my arch nemesis. No, it was fantastic. I highly recommend London and Paris. It was wonderful.
I feel like
a new man.
You went to the UK.
Yeah. I was there, yes. Yes, I was there during some interesting protests. We'll just leave it there.
Well, now I want to know, is it like about Brexit or was it your
beard? Oh boy, was it about Brexit.
Okay.
Yeah. Let me tell you something. If you want to take the Channel from London to Paris, don't do it when a dude has climbed up on top of the train station, because you ain't going nowhere.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Were you the dude?
No. Oh. No, I was in line, a very long line, to get on a train that was almost certainly not going to leave.
Well, thank you for narrowly escaping disaster aboard the Channel to come with us and play one of our most divisive games.
Yes, the most cringeworthy segment in all of podcasting, yes.
which was again, I feel like we have to straighten out the historical record here, which was your idea.
Yes, it was. I one day on a whim suggested that I present you with different scenarios and you have to determine whether or not the scenario I'm presenting to you is in fact a real one, or if I made it up, cease. Mm-hmm. And so the way this works is I will present the scenario, and then The two gentlemen will have 3 minutes to deliberate on whether or not I'm telling the truth or I'm lying, and they may ask questions of me if they follow an arbitrary rule of my choosing, which I realize I did not think of before I came in here. So, in honor of the topic, for you to be able to ask a question, you must preface it with the phrase, "Doctor, doctor, give me the news."
I got a bad case of cutting you?
Just the first part, just to give me the news, followed by your question. And now I will read out the scenario. When I am done, we will start the timer. So get the big grandfather clock ready.
I'm limbering up.
Dr. Hasty Lanyon was a bit of an eccentric surgeon. He was nearly equal parts performer and doctor, and had a flair for the macabre. He had studied, though probably never directly, the work of Luigi Galvani, for whom the galvanic response is named. Lanyon took to extremes and, in northern England in the early 1800s, demonstrated some rather ghoulish applications of the technology upon cadavers that I am assured were totally acquired legally. While there were no truly reliable reports from those demonstrations, some reporters of questionable honesty wrote of corpses pointing, grimacing, twitching, and, in one case, even sitting up and gasping in response to the electrical impulses Dr. Lanyon applied. Modern historians and doctors doubt the veracity of those claims, but it seems that Hasty Lanyon was at least well known for some pretty primitive corpse puppetry. Start the timer.
Doctor, doctor, give me the news.
Yes, Mr. Bolin.
So this guy Hasty?
Mm-hmm.
This guy Hasty was primarily known for this, or?
It was how he became famous. Otherwise, he was a doctor, studied at the University of Edinburgh mm-hmm. in the School of Medicine. Mm-hmm. But apart from, these are really the only records of, he doesn't have like a long storied career that exists in any record, but there are records of these supposed demonstrations.
Hasty, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Sounds made up to me. Mm. Sounds like Hasty, like he was a little too hasty, perhaps.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know why I feel optimistic about this, but I'm going with true.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Oh, that's not what I was getting at all, Ben. But you
all
know
right,
what?
Let's debate.
I was really only going on
because the name is super mm-hmm. sketchy, right?
Sketchy sounding.
I feel like that. Mm. That's true. Maybe you could ask.
Doctor, doctor, give me the news.
Yes.
What did he do again?
So he stuck electrodes onto cadavers and zapped them and made them twitch around a lot. To give you a little more detail, just because I said early 1800s, the time period we're looking at is 1808, so that's about 3 decades after Galvani, and also supposedly was one of the inspirations for Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
Well, that yes, surely that
which
makes
was published
sense.
In 1818.
I feel like there's too much detail here. Now I'm starting to doubt it. I'm gonna stick with true. I'm gonna stick with true.
You're starting to doubt it. And you're going to stick with true.
Yeah, exactly.
You are a man of contradictions.
Well, you are a man of mind games. Mm. You
true.
Vile quister. Mm.
It's
creature.
True. I'm out of practice with the quister.
That's true. He's been relaxing on the sand.
It's true. I did. I took a cruise.
Yeah,
it was nice.
Was it nice?
Mm. It was not in Nice. It was in Paris. But it was nice. That's very cute.
Did you eat any patisserie?
I did. In fact, there was a patisserie right across the street from the apartment.
Guys, we have 40 seconds.
All right. What did you say? You're going to stick with true?
You want to lock it in?
Let's lock it in. True.
3, 2, 1. True.
You guys got to read more. Dr. Hasty Lanyon is a character in Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I made it upsies. Now, interestingly though, I should say, first of all, the inspiration, supposedly, for Mary Shelley's Frankenstein mm-hmm. was Dr. Joseph Conrad Dippel, who was active in the 17th century and was born in, Castle Frankenstein. Ooh, and then Giovanni Aldippi, who was the nephew to Luigi Galvani, actually did do demonstrations similar to what I described, where supposedly corpses had opened up their eyes, pointed, punched the air, kicked the air. But again, these were just supposedly people would pass out looking at these demonstrations.
Uh-huh.
I don't know exactly how reliable those are either, but what I gave you was total fiction.
Yeah, that's what I began to suspect when you had too many ready-made details.
Yeah,
that yep. you were, dare I say, hasty to provide.
Well, I wanted to give you a chance. You've lost the last few, and I thought, well, if I just keep feeding them, surely they're going to. But nope, nope, you just had to go down that road with me.
No, it turns out we're hungry boys, Jonathan.
Well, and to be fair, it is similar to things that have been reported. I was mostly hoping that you had read Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I was like, this is a coin flip. It may be that Ben would turn to me and say, you mean like the character in Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde? And I would say, whoopsies.
It's been a long time, but you know what? That gives us a new goal. Maybe one day we can ask a question that just completely blows up the scenario you've presented. Mm. If we did that, would you ever be in a situation where you say, whoops, no, I know you too well, my old friend. You would continue with the charade.
Here's the problem, is that if you ask me a legitimate question about a legitimate historical fact and I don't know the answer, I would be honor bound to say I don't know the answer to that question. And that means that I should probably do the same thing for the fake ones. Because otherwise, if you ask me a question and I don't know the answer to that question and I tell you that, you're going to say, well, this is obviously one of the true ones. We win.
I was so close when you started giving out the details. Well, that one's on me. Can't win them all.
No, but we can't win most of them,
but it'd be nice to win one, actually. Yeah.
You were almost even with me for a while.
I know. Part of the fun of this, though, is eating crow from time to time, you know?
It's very Tom and Jerry to me.
Yep.
You know?
I like it.
So, despite winning today's round, Jonathan Strickland, a.k.a. The Quister, thank you so much for dropping by. We're glad that you made it out of the tunnel.
Durian.
Sure. Did you say durian?
Durian.
Ah, what's that mean?
It's nothing.
Oh.
It's usually what you say if someone says thank you. The common response is, it's nothing.
Which no is, big deal.
Yeah, like not a problem.
Mm-hmm. No problem. Yeah. No sweat. Zero perspiration. Mm-hmm. Thank you for coming on the show. Thanks, as always, to our super producer, Casey Pegram.
Thanks to Gabe Lucier, our fantabulous research associate. And thanks to Alex Williams, who composed our theme.
So what are some of the strange Sawbone-esque stories of medical quackery or medical mishaps that you have heard? What are your favorite ones? Share them with us and your fellow listeners. Also, shout out to the podcast Sawbones. That's a great show.
Yeah, on the Maximum Fun Network, which we're huge fans of.
Justin McElroy, as I recall, is one of the hosts of that show.
I do believe you recall correctly. Mm. You can write us at ridiculous@howstuffworks.com. We're going to stick with that one for the meantime. We may have another one inching in pretty soon, but for the time being, use that one. You can also hit us up on our Facebook group, The Ridiculous Historians, where, you know, folks are posting memes. The Jonathan Strickland, the Quister, even creeps his way in there from time to time.
That is true. That is. Don't think we don't see you,
dude. I keep getting tagged.
Don't think we don't see you. You can also find us on Instagram and Twitter. We each have our own personal Instagrams. If you want to see our various shenanigans, I'm Ben Bolin.
I am at Embryonic Insider.
I'm at John Strickland.
No H.
No H.
We'll see you next time, folks. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.